And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lavallo, and have we an hour for you. We are so happy to welcome in studio Dr. Philip Feldberg, DDS President and owner of New England Center. Dr. Feldberg, welcome to Front and Center.
You know, Dan, it's just I've known you for many years, and to have the opportunity to share some time with you and your listeners of a very special audience is very special to me. Thank you very much.
And we have Dr. Feldberg in today to talk about how he got started in business, to talk about his business, to tap into a lot of his sage advice, and you have the opportunity as well. If you have any questions for Dr. Feldberg, you can call us at 888-574-2723. When you were a kid, let's say you were 7 or 8 years old, did you ever think that you wanted to enter the field of dentistry?
Actually, no. And I grew up in a real small town in New York State with just about 6,000 people. And in the summertime, because it was at the foothills of the Catskill Mountains in New York State, that I wouldn't go uptown because the population swelled to 100,000. My grandmother came here from Russia in the early 1900s with four sisters when they escaped the pogroms where they were hunting and killing Jews. And the other family members settled in New York City, and my grandfather had allergies and settled 80 miles north and west in small town Monticello. And the cousins would come up in the summertime and spend the summer with Aunt Lena, and one of them became very close to my dad. And he was the one that influenced me. But early on, I had graced the smarts enough, I guess, to go into medicine, but had a skewed vision of what that was about, because one of the three physicians in town dropped dead at 57 of a massive coronary. One of the other ones had alcoholism in his home. We didn't know that was a disease. And so I said, I don't know if this is for me, for family. I knew I didn't want to go into my dad's business because we'd kill each other. And I fell in love with biology as a sophomore when I took this Saturday class. Who took Saturday classes in bacteriology, where we'd go swab water fountains and go check the chickens out to see if they had salmonella? And here I go through college. I do well. I go to an undergraduate school where 60% of the graduating biology majors get into medicine. But I didn't do well initially. It was, you know, we talk about intersections, and your audience, if they take a moment, will look at the different intersections in their life. So one of my intersections was my cousin comes to my dad's house and said to me, Philip, what are you going to do when you grow up? And here I am, a junior and undergraduate. And to this day, people are going to laugh. I looked at my cousin's car, I looked at my father's car, and I said, I think I'll be a dentist. I did. I mean, that sounds crazy, but I did very well on the boards, and I got into NYU in Buffalo. And my cousin was teaching. He was a gum specialist at NYU, and said, I'll be your personal tutor. And the last time I looked in a dictionary, S-L-A-V-E-D-R-I-V-E-R, does not spell tutor. He beat the daylights out of me in dental school. And, you know, we talk about intersections. One time he asked me to read about a very sophisticated gum surgery procedure. I was doing more gum surgery than the graduate students were, and I didn't do it. I didn't do it because I was lazy. I just didn't get to it. And in front of 40-chair clinic, he threw me out. He screamed at my patient, and he dismissed my patient and threw me out, screamed at me in front of 40 people. And I sat there, and I walked out, and I said, you know what? I screwed up. I went back to my cousin, and I used different language because it was my cousin. And it was a kick in my fanny that I really needed. And then along comes Harold Adelston, the department chairman in the Children's Dental Department. When I first walked in, early on, dental experience, I walk into dental school the first day for, you know, orientation. I walk into the oral surgery clinic, and they're extracting a routine molar, and I almost passed out on the floor.
Really?
I said, they have me in the doctor's lounge with a wet towel, and I said, what on earth am I doing here? But I went on and had a real strong support team, fell in love with it. Had no idea what I was going to do. I knew I wanted to specialize in children. 2 more years of school, I go home, I tell my wife. She says, when are you going to earn a living, for God's sake? Sits on the bed crying, and then goes back to work. Saves up the money by walking to work in New York City. Saves a bus fare. When I graduated, she gave me my first $100 bill and bought me a fancy top coat. And so the sacrifices were there. You know, the hard times were there. My dad went bankrupt twice. I almost went bankrupt. So I come to Connecticut not knowing anybody at all. And some of my contemporaries in my program decided to go to Boston because their wives didn't like Connecticut.
Yeah, why Connecticut?
Well, I came to Connecticut by accident. Earlier on this morning, we were talking about the books that one reads. And, you know, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, talks about going down the road of life as the horse or the rider. And I had no idea it was the horse. You know, aim, kick my flanks, and I go this way or that way. This was the first real time that I began to take control. And so, but I didn't quite yet. And so these guys said, oh, go to Windsor. Our wives don't like it. It's not busy enough. It's not cosmopolitan enough. We came here open next to four pediatricians. My father-in-law didn't finish ninth grade, was a house painter, painted and wallpapered my office to save money. Some bank in Connecticut's back again. It wasn't at the time, was CBT. Loaned me money for a house and an office. And I didn't realize you have to pay it back. So that was not an easy task. And so we struggled for a really long time. And my training and background was to always have parents in to keep me company and see what I can do with children, because I got some really great training as to how to love children and not hurt them and have them have the dental experience, the health experience, something exciting. And the parents said, hey, will you treat me? And so I said, no, I'm this fancy specialist. And but I started to bring on doctors. And when we had the blizzard of 78, some of your listeners and us have been around that long, when right. Ella Grasso was probing, you know, for sticks with her pith helmet on, and I'm out in California looking at these huge dental practices, and I had a partner at the time. We subsequently passed away waiting for a heart transplant. We came back, and on March 1st of 1980, we did go to a politically connected law firm. Happened to be Updike, Kelly & Spellacy. And they told us, you know, your risk of advertising is pretty small because there had been a court case, Bates Osteen in Arizona, that said lawyers could advertise. So we took out a quarter-page ad in allegedly the country's oldest continuously publishing newspaper, the Hartford Courant, your teeth worth $25, and got 400 families and went at it ever since. And
let's go back to that for just a moment, because there are people who might not remember that who are listening to this program today, that lawyers and doctors and dentists, they didn't advertise, right?
No, and it was really poo-pooed, and I was quite concerned about that, and so was my partner at the time, because, you know, this is our livelihood. You go to school for all these years, and somebody can shut you down. As it turns out, we were always meticulous to not say we're better than somebody else. We just wanted to let them know about availability. And so that was, you know, that did not make organized dentistry too happy. But I had a wife and a family and patients to take care of, and our focus was on the experience. And that's what has continued to come forward. As we moved ahead with all that stuff, we went through the ups and downs of this very challenging economic times. And 1986, if you recall, the tax laws were changing. So capital gains was going from 20 to 28%. And in 2 hours, I bought my building. I mean, I called my banker up, and I remember this, and I said, Richard, I won't use his last name, I said, Richard, sit down, I'm going to buy this building. And this was a week and a day before the end of 1986, and I knew if I could pull this off that the sellers would not get hit with an extra 8% tax.
Right.
It was legal to do that. So the bank gave me all this money, and I had no idea about any of this stuff. And we bought a 10,000-square-foot building up in Windsor, right off exit 38, renovated the building, and I didn't close for one day. You talk about the business people and the people that are listening to this station and your show on a regular basis. They know what adversity is. We were open Friday till about noon. My dad and a bunch of friends in a dental company were packing up. There's a lot of equipment in a dental office.
That's,
I mean,
right.
You know, you go in there. And Saturday morning we opened. And my wife and I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, let the kids sleep, and said, oh, my God, we don't have charts. We don't have instruments. We opened, and we didn't get our certificate of occupancy until Saturday morning. So it was some crazy times. And then, of course, moving forward, you have what's going on in the economy now. And one of the things that we've done for us is that we've done extended hours and one-stop shopping for everybody, because we have all the specialists on staff. And we want it to be a family-oriented, comfortable, safe place to be. Because the experience in dentistry, you know, I remember watching Little Shop of Horrors with Rick Moranis and Bill Murray and I forget the guy, the other comedian, and Bill Murray goes in and says, you know, do root canals on all my teeth with Novocaine. So people have these horrible, horrible experiences in dentistry. And it's something that not everybody does, but that the chronic infectious disease of gum disease affects between 70 and 90% of us as adults. So if we can help those people have a good experience, then here they come.
You know, I want to go back to what you said earlier about taking Saturday classes. What was the impetus behind that?
Oh, I was just insanely curious. I just loved biology, and we had this great, this is interesting. It's the teacher. It's the person that you deal with in your business life, in your own personal life. Because I said this to you earlier that, you know, the chairman of my children's dental department says you can't teach nobody nothing. That's exactly the vernacular used. You can only hope to motivate them. I say, after all my years of living and practicing, can't motivate anybody. You can only hope to inspire them to learn. So this teacher, Eugene Weinstein, who when he retired started making cheesecakes out of his house, Eugene Weinstein just grabbed us by our souls and took us to chicken farms and took us to sewer treatment plants and said, wow, this is really good. Teach us a sterile technique. And I just, the fetal pig was cool, but this was magic. And from that point forth, you know, of course, the courses and stuff that you take in that general direction. And I got to tell you that a big part of this was the support of my 51-year marriage. I can't say enough about that. And surrounding ourselves with people that are willing to support us. So, you know, we talked about this, and I'm really a strong believer in this. You want to go someplace? And I think the demographics of your listenership from the program that you put on, these are the people that are doing things in their lives. But there's a whole group of people that may not be, that don't know that they can.
Well, that's the thing, because as you know, there are participants and there are observers. And there are many observers who perhaps don't realize that they could be participants. So how do they reach that realization?
People have been listening to me for a long time, and I have all these different stories, and one of them is about an orange. So a bunch of years ago, we had somebody come and do a lecture on and a presentation on a new technology for root canals. And as soon as I say that, people are going to turn the radio off because, oh, my God, that's the worst thing on the face of the earth. And I had breakfast with Charlie, and you know, this is getting into flu season, so, of course, I'm going to encourage people to get flu shots. And if you get the flu and you feel really badly and you're really sick, but then you have a moment where the symptoms get less, and you get this desire for a huge, juicy navel orange, and then you're back into the throes of fever and all the other things that are running from both ends, and it gets clear again, and that desire for that orange gets so strong that no matter what, you're going to go in the car, you're hoping to get stopped by a cop for DUI because you definitely look impaired. You get to the supermarket, you come home with an orange. I invite people. You don't come home with grapefruits or lemons. I invite people to take some time on a regular basis and sit back or go in a quiet place and say, what is my orange? And the end of that story, Charlie called me like 9 months later, excited out of his gourd, saying, Dr. Felberg, I found my orange. And I think that lots of people have that potential, but nobody invites them, asks them, tells them, you know, take some time. I'm a big believer in reading. Take some time. Think outside the box. If you're unhappy with where you're at, and there's lots of reasons and causes for some of that stuff, some is in your control, some is not in your control, take a little bit of time and go find somebody. Because I have young people come in with me all the time and say, what do I want to do? I had a young woman in Tuesday night. She's 16. She's a senior now. So she started school early, and she knows she wants to be a nurse. I didn't know that till I was in my, you know, late teens, early 20s, what I wanted to do. And I said, go shadow somebody. You're a prime example. You have people, I know that a bit of your history, and you have people that inspired you, didn't you?
I sure did.
I mean, when you got into radio, who was your inspiration?
Well, one of my inspirations was Bob Steele, from the standpoint of hosting a program like this. And then I had another inspiration, and I've been able to live it as far as being a sportscaster was concerned. My inspiration was the late Mel Allen, who was the voice of the New York Yankees. So they inspired me, and they somehow drove me to try and be involved in this field and follow my aspirations.
How many times did you get knocked down?
Too many to mention, you know that. But you, as you say, you pick yourself up, as the song goes, you dust yourself off, and you keep on going.
Well, we talked about this, and I think this is important to remind people, is that what has made not just this country, but the people around the world succeed, is they didn't see failure as something that they couldn't, you know. We talked Thomas Edison, 10,000 times for a light bulb. Didn't he get tired of failing? I wasn't failing. I just didn't find something that worked.
By the way, this is an interesting point, only because, and I don't want to get political here, but it seems that failure these days over the last week has suddenly become a bad thing, that you're not allowed to fail and take it and use the landscape that's out there in order to pick yourself up and dust yourself off. But you look at the successful people, and yes, they have failed, haven't they?
Well, we go back to what I bought my building in 2 hours. I knew that the tax law said that you're going to pay capital gains, Mr. Seller, of 8%, and I'll share it. It was $500,000. Now, that was a lot of money. That was a lot of money back in 1986. It still is a lot of money. And, you know, I knew that if I could pull this off in before, and we closed Tuesday afternoon when Christmas and New Year's Eve was Wednesday evening.
Wow.
And the people flew up in a small plane from, because my building used to be a diaper service. So I like to tell people I went from one end of the alimentary canal to the other. And I can be a little bit off color and say we went from tushes to teeth. And I knew that that was the way the game was played. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong because that enabled them. It gave me the opportunity to set up my practice and my business. And I'm very proud. You know, we have about 25 people that I employ. I'm not a 100 employee person, but you look at the people that have made it and you know how hard it is for small business. It doesn't matter what your field is. The trick is that, you know, we've had this, people out there know this. It's harder, but not impossible in the state of Connecticut. This is why some people are moving out, because it's harder and taxes are stuff. And, I mean, you've got to take care of people. But for crying out loud, one of the things we really need to focus on is giving those that are putting forth the effort, give them the opportunity to do that.
Small business, by the way, and you know this, small business produces 55% of all of the jobs in this country. And they're obviously a big contributor to business here in the state of Connecticut. There are thousands of small businesses who employ 25 or less. So what are some of the challenges you face as a small business owner?
Well, I have to, you know, without being coming across as negative, it continues to grow in regulatory adherence. And the amount of hours and time that it takes to do this, I think that while I think it's important for us to be responsible, I think especially for professions, especially for you in your profession, we know right from wrong. We're not out there. Yes, there's always some bad apples wherever that they are. It doesn't matter what field that you're in. But part of the preparation and the life experience is that we know how to be responsible. We know how to be ethical. And for some reason, over the past decades, we've had interventions and invasions saying, no, you don't know. We're going to tell you how to do that. And with that, again, you said getting political. Even President Clinton said, what's happening with the health care law? So I'm lucky dentistry has not been as adversely affected. You have lots of physicians, lots of health care people that are leaving because of the paperwork or because of the invasions. And I don't want to go down that road too far, but, you know.
Well, if you had to, if in your particular field, if you had to pick three regulations, let's say, that are stifling your particular business, three regulations imposed by the state of Connecticut, what would they be?
I'd have to reflect on that a little bit, but what floats to the top, for example, you go and buy an X-ray unit. The state taxes it. The state wants to know if it's inspected every year. I mean, we know if the quality of the X-rays come out, and I know that they've moved forward with digital, which takes much less radiation. That's one of the things. They just want more and more control. I know, I will say this, when I was in New York State, they were much better about drugs. You had to fill out triplicate prescription forms, and I didn't find a problem with it. But now you have people that have a couple of bad apples that have made it so that the government feels we have to watch over you. And it's not just in the, because I think that there's the same way the FDA watches drugs, there is a whole segment of organized dentistry that watches over the quality of the materials and the safety of the things that we use in your mouth. Why do we need more people watching over that? Because what it does, it adds to our expense, and it detracts from the experience. This is what I'm finding. You go for healthcare experience today to any of your doctors. How many of them look at you in the eye? How many do that? And in spite of all that, we as a profession, and me in particular, has made that commitment. I'm not going to do that. I told people, I mean, you have computers in all the room. I don't want to catch you spending more time looking at that screen than looking at the patient. You sit with that person and you give them that experience. My wife has had hip surgery 13 and a half years ago. We go for the yearly follow-up. This guy sits down with us. I don't know if I should put his name out there, but I will. Grady Benson is just one of the most consummate orthopedic professionals, doctors I've ever met. He comes in, he remembers when things are, It's invaluable, and they're getting more in our way. And did they do it intentionally? They think, you know, the road to Hades is paved with good intentions, right. You know?
So you feel that you're constantly being looked over your shoulder, and the fear is if there is that innocent mistake, that you're going to pay a hefty fine. And do you also feel that you are paying the price for maybe a couple of bad dentists?
Oh, yeah. And again, you know, because there's been some docs that have had some problems over the past couple of decades. I know some of them. Some of them in particular I know didn't do anything horribly wrong, but they decided that, you know, we're going to make an example or whatever they're going to do. I mean, I remember, I will tell you a story. When I first came here, I bought Orange stationery. And my appointment cards, as a kid's dentist, is I had a graphic artist draw the white rabbit from Alice in Wonderland and, with a big clock. And that's what I put my appointments on. I would draw the time on the appointment card. And at the time, the dental commission said, excuse me, son, we don't do Orange stationery in Connecticut.
Wow. Wow.
And then I go and get on PM Magazine because I was struggling. And at the time, this great show that was on after Walter Cronkite.
That show.
Denny Myers is a executive producer, had 5 national TV Emmys. I called him up because I'm starving to death. I mean, I could, you know, my first year in practice, I made less than the garbage men in New York were making. And I thought I was pretty good, you know. And so I called him up out of desperation. Then he calls me back and I said, you got about 20 minutes to wrap. And I was me. I haven't changed a whole lot about that. And he decided to put me on television. Well, guess what? Chairman of the pediatric dental department at UConn calls him up and says, we don't think Feldberg should be on. Let's put our talent on.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And so I have always been very meticulous in the message that I send about your dental health. Always. Just take off 75 to 80% of that goop. I used to think it was plaque until this delicious 4-year-old girl at First Congregational Church Nursery School in Windsor said, Dr. Feldberg, it's goop, and I have 3 daughters. And for those of you out there with daughters, at 4 years old, they know everything and only get smarter. So I've learned, you know, the message is really simple. It's not hard. And if we have the opportunity, as people, not just in my profession or your profession, doesn't matter what your job is, if you invest more time in relating to the people versus the other stuff.
Absolutely. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the Orange stationery. Are you kidding me? Did they give you a reason why you couldn't use Orange stationery?
Law of inertia. We don't do that here. And this was way before I even thought about advertising. So, you know, and I've always been meticulous about that kind of stuff. In order to succeed, and this is what I hope that your listeners take from the time that you're willing to let me blab to all these people, is it's interesting because I want to encourage people to read. I want to encourage them to do that. And then regardless of what direction you want to go in your life, take some time on a regular basis, go up in the balcony, look down. I happen to read some really weird things as a dentist, one of which is the Harvard Business Review.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought because we're coming up on a break. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Philip Feldberg. We've got a lot to talk about. He is the president and owner of New England Center. And you can give us a call if you have any questions. Telephone number is 888-574-2723. I have a lot more questions to ask Dr. Feldberg. His fascinating story. And it is a great, great story. And I also want to get into Dr. Feldberg's work with the veterans. So we have a lot more to talk about, a lot of ground to cover. And again, if you want to weigh in on the conversation, you can give us a call at 888-574-2723. Dan Lovallo back with Dr. Philip Feldberg following Fox News here on Front and Center. Stay tuned.
Hands of industry, the decision makers, those that control the money. A breakdown of the economics of Connecticut business. Front and Center on the Talk of Connecticut with Dan Lovallo.
And welcome back to Front and Center, brought to you by Frontier Communications. I'm Dan Lovallo. So honored to have in studio with us today, and he is just a bundle of inspiration, Dr. Philip Feldberg. He is the president and owner of New England Dental Center. We said we would take some phone calls. Dr. Feldberg, are you ready for some phone calls?
Absolutely, Dan.
Okay, 888-574-2723 is our telephone number. Let's go to Joe in Newington. Welcome to Front and Center, Joe. Joe, are you there?
Hey, I don't think this technology is out yet, but it's supposed to be out like in a few months or something. I keep seeing this on the internet. Are you aware of some kind of cavity filling technology where there's no going to be no drilling required. Have you heard of this?
Well, I think that's a great question. And by the way, they've been talking about laser dentistry for a long time. I know that that technology, while, so let me ask you the question. What is the part about the fillings that gets you the worst? The sound of the drill, which by the way is taking care of my family and lots of other people. And that is not one of the favorite sounds. So, but you know, there's, you still have to, the problem with that is that, the enamel of your teeth is really hard. And once you get through the enamel, the cavity can spread a lot. So there's got to be some way to get the decay, the infected process out farther down. So, you know, I think that that technology has been talked about for a long time, and I don't think that that it's necessarily going to be a simple fix. You have to completely change, and then you have the different filling materials that you have to go place after that's down. But the real trick is, and it's a mechanical thing, you know, and hopefully that will come to pass, but I don't see that happening quite yet.
Okay, no, I appreciate the answer. Thank you.
All right, Joe, thanks for the call. And if you'd like to weigh in, our telephone number is 888-574-2723. I don't want to forget, so I want to get right to what you have been doing for our veterans. How about talking about that?
You know, when I watched the stories about what happened in Phoenix, and I was the Veterans Hospital in Newington reached out to me a couple years ago. And they wanted to know if I could accommodate a stretcher. So I have to be careful about this story that it doesn't come out that I did something special because they don't see it. And it turns out that they had a veteran who was on active duty had a spinal injury that he became quadriplegic, and he's been quadriplegic in for like 26 years. And this is not a condemnation of the Veterans Hospital, but they didn't get to him. And so they put in 5 implants in his mouth, and they left him without teeth for 9 years. And so what I did is we made that accommodation, and because he lives in Windsor, we did make a couple of house calls, and we got Jeff teeth, and it's just changed his life. So if you want to know the one story for 2016 that floats to the top for me is this fellow who got his college degree and actually got into a master's program in writing. And I've been to visit him. He's a fascinating fellow. When you're around him for 5 minutes, you don't see his disability. The story of the year for me is this young man. I asked him how his writing is coming because he started to write a book about what happened to him with his injury. And I said, how is your writing coming? And the guy said, I put it on hold because I've had 2 counselors from the Veterans Hospital come and they're helping me to get work. Now, for those of you that have never been around disabled people, that inspired me. I've been to Springfield to the Veterans Facility where the VA administration is, and I learned in Massachusetts a little different than in Connecticut. Each there's different centers, and we've reached out so that, you know, because they're a forgotten group. I will tell you that, you know, in certain cases that the Veterans Administration will cover their dental care. When I first saw this guy at our office, I didn't care if I never got paid. I just said, you know, because my son-in-law was in Iraq and in the Coast Guard and now is running the crane operation at Groton Sub Base. And we don't understand the value that our young men and women and older men and women. My father-in-law, when he was alive, was in his 30s when he volunteered during World War II. He was too old to go fight, they said, so they made him a medic. And he tells stories back then that when he got into France, he would use wine to brush his teeth and beer to shampoo his hair because they didn't have potable, drinkable water. I think that, and we don't hold ourselves out. We don't want any accolades. We don't want any pats on the back. You just got to do that, and we do it quietly. But there is a big need, and the number of people at that time, they didn't have the staff at the Veterans Hospital to see him. They had a backlog of 6 months at that point in time where people couldn't get in. So we've reached out and let them know that, and we've seen some, not lots, but when people come in and they're veterans, we go out of our way to just, you know, respect what their needs are and help them as best as we can.
That's terrific. Now, I want to get back to your story. You mentioned before how you nearly filed for bankruptcy. How did you turn it around?
I have to be careful about the language of this, but, you know, you talked about non-dissuadability. This was early on in our career, and my partner at the time and I, this seems like a lot, it was to us. We put together an SBA proposal for around $200,000 to get the practice off the ground. You know, you need certain equipment and stuff. This was, again, in 1980 when we first started as New England Dental Center. And my partner's accountant said, you know, you guys, you're not making it. I think you really are better off declaring bankruptcy. And I watched my father go through two bankruptcies, and one of which was in the 60s when, if the house was not in mom and dad's name, I'd have been homeless on the streets. And he locked the Ford station wagon in the garage for 3.5 years. It was serious back then. I saw the damages, and I used some bad four-letter explicatives. I said, I'm not doing that, and I just went out and worked harder. Been through lots of things in my career, and, you know, I think that people don't realize how hard that they can work when the time comes. It helps to have a support team. You know, I've talked about this, how valuable it is to have a board of advisors. Doesn't have to be a board of directors. Find people that have a certain amount of success themselves and are willing to reach their hand out and be a sounding board. I mean, early on in my career, I had 7 different board of advisors. Different, they're not dentists. They were attorneys, consultants, just business people. And I said, here's what's going on. Tell me what you think. And I would actually do surveys of these people. And if they said, just shut up and work, then that's what I'd managed to do. And I had the support from people around me. And I had the support of the patients. I just, you know, no matter what happened. And I worked harder at caring for them even more. And that works.
You're big on making lists, aren't you?
Oh, I am a compulsive list maker. Now, I wanted to talk about that. Thank you for bringing that back up. And there are studies that show that when you write things down, not type them into a computer, they go from short-term memory to long-term memory. So I go up on my balcony in my head and compulsively make these lists, and I will share people who want to try this. By the way, you know, and the director that works with me now taught me something new, and that is 1 through 5. So if you sit down and make a weekly list or a daily list, I'm still old-fashioned. I use a day timer, man. I write this stuff out, and I use all these different colors. But one of the things that I love to do now is I put 1 through 5 of the importance of what I need to do. And I do the ones they got to get done today. I don't care if it's 11 o'clock at night. You got to get something done. If it's that phone call, whatever it is, you know, call that patient, whatever the case would be. 2's, first couple of days. 4s and 5s are not unimportant, but, you know, they might be make sure you got somebody that's going to plow your snow this winter, you know, because it's now getting to be October. And I remember after the tornado, 1979, October 3rd, where my house was the first house hit. I remember when they finally brought the trailer onto my property, I remember that we had a snowstorm. So, I mean, I think it was Halloween that year. I think that for people out there among your audience who want to do something, write it down. You don't have to believe it. A very quick story about that, because Napoleon Hill in his book, Think and Grow Rich, on page 36, says that whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. So if you write something down, even I never would have thought, Dan Lavallo, that I would have the kind of practice and the kind of people that I work with and that come to visit us and see us for their care. I wouldn't have conceived that. I just put my nose down and worked. Now I sit back and I look and I say, okay, here's where we're at. Where can we go next? And I'm very proud of the people that I work with and the people that come see me, because in spite of the economy, we have had terrific recovery. We have had, in the last 3 years, between 30 and 40% recovery. And how am I doing that? I have great people around me. I work them hard, and I still, at my age, still work them hard. It's been over 4 decades that I'm still out there loving this.
Wow. By the way, keeping lists, I think, is such a big thing for other areas, too. And I have always told this to compulsive shoppers who, in some cases, run up debt by, they have to buy it if they see it. I've always told them, because this is what I've done, is I'll just write it down. Don't buy it. I'm very deliberate when it comes to shopping anyway. I won't buy it. And then you go home, and 5 days later, you say to yourself, well, I really didn't need it anyway. So think of the amount of money that you save, but write it down. Don't buy it if you really don't need it and you are a compulsive shopper looking to reduce debt.
I have a couple of stories about the people that work at this radio station. I'm not going to bring up names, but I know one in particular who happens to be my representative for the ads and stuff that I buy some time with you guys with, and she was eager to talk about her wish list to go to Italy, and I made her write it down. And I made her write some other things down about the second part of her life when she moves on. She writes them down, and she calls me periodically, excited out of her gourd. Oh, I got it done. My best story ever about the value of writing things down, because they accomplish 100 times more than the people that don't write it down, was after my crisis when I had a ruptured bowel in 2005 and almost died, my daughter got me convinced to have some massages once in a while, help my scar tissue. And this woman that I was seeing wanted to go to a wedding that afternoon. I saw her at 9 o'clock in the morning. Her parents couldn't, her in-laws couldn't, her husband couldn't. I said, I want you to write down a 3x5 card. I see myself finding a sitter so I can go to this wedding at 4:30. I get back to my house about 2 o'clock. She calls me on the phone screaming, Phil, you're not going to believe this. I found somebody. I know it's anecdotal, but if you try this and are willing to commit to that on a regular basis, I also want to talk that you, as you said, Dan, not just about your business life or your personal life. I think there's 4 areas that people should focus on. And regardless of what your thoughts are about this, I think one of them is family social, depending on what your life situation is. One of them is physical. Hey, we're not getting younger. And a bunch of your listeners, you know, I don't know what your demographics are, but a bunch of them are working now. And make that time. Somebody else here goes to the health club. I know these people well.
Right.
Third area is spiritual, whatever that means to you. Whatever that means to you. It's just, for me, it's not just the fact that this is a Jewish New Year and that time of the year, but for me, I think that's an important foundation. And the fourth one, which people avoid like the plague, is financial. And they need to be willing to sit down, find help, or find people that will drive you. There is work out there. It may be harder now than when we started, but I don't think so. If that's the case, you're younger than us. Work harder.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there is work out there. There's no question about it. Talk to Philip Feldberg, president and owner of New England Dental Center. Our guest, you said something before about read. Elaborate.
I read enough technical journals when I got out of dental school. I was sick of it. But then I had a friend, again, you have somebody that comes into your life that gave me 2 very important books and harangued me till I read them. Think and Grow Rich and The Magic of Thinking Big by an industrial psychologist, Dr. David Schwartz. I fought him for months. I did. And then something magic happened. I opened the book. I tell people I have a book list. If anybody ever wants, let me know and I'll figure out how to get them some of the book list or you can make it available. One of my all-time inspirational books is Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach, where the seagull doesn't just want to eat and poop. He wants to fly faster and fly higher and do maneuvers that other seagulls don't do, and he's ostracized. If you feel ostracized in your life, celebrate. Go buy soft ice cream, unless you're diabetic, and then go buy sugar-free ice cream. I mean, and the trick is, with all of these lists and with all of this, the things that push you down, celebrate little wins. You need to do that on a regular basis. After I almost died, I wrote a legacy list. Not time for this now, but one of them, number 4 in my legacy list, is always take time to not do. You're so busy with your family, with your personal life, with all the things that you deal in this political environment. Take the time on a regular basis. I don't care if it's just take a walk. You've got to get outside. You've got to clear your head, because otherwise it gets oppressive and the stress wears you down.
We were talking before, particularly as we grow more mature, as we age, how important it is to step out of your comfort zone. How about talking about that?
When I talked earlier in the show, some of you may have missed it, about reading. I don't know how I got into reading. Well, I could tell you the Harvard Business Review story, but I just picked one up recently, and it talked about successful people. And it talks about that in this survey that was done, 41% adapt to new situations, and 47% seek out new experiences and relationships. If you think you're comfortable where you're at, successful people do the uncomfortable until they become comfortable. If it's too uncomfortable for you, pick something that's only a little bit uncomfortable. So you do that. And what they find is that the people that succeed, 74% of them are unconventional thinkers. So when you think you got it owned, one of the multitudinous books that I read is called Decisive. It talks about aiming the spotlight someplace different. And that takes you out of your comfort zone. Gee, I know where everything is in my garage. I know where everything is in my life. Go to work a different way. I mean, all these little things that you do that will stretch you, and they may be terribly uncomfortable in the beginning. Coming to the station today, 91 was blocked. I come down from Windsor. 91 was blocked. I know how to go down Park Avenue. I said, I got to be there when I told them I'm going to be there. So the traffic has stopped here. Let's get off at Park Avenue and come down. No big deal. In the beginning, it may be very hard for people to do that. But once you begin, and you need support team to encourage you, say, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, my wife of 51 years told me I can do it. I can do anything. And I guess after this time, I kind of believe her. I can't do everything. I can do anything, but I can't do everything. And if people adopt some of those kind of mindsets, it's little steps. Just go do something different tomorrow.
How often do you read?
I make it my business. And it's interesting because I go through phases where I have three or four business books or books about successful people, and I will read between 15 minutes and a half an hour every single day. And somebody says this book, so I start that book, and I highlight and I underline and I fold over pages, and then I take notes, and I carry those notes with me, either in my daytime or in my pocket, so that I am able to refresh my memory on a regular basis. And then I look at my goals. I look at the things that I wrote that I wanted to do. I do it monthly, and I do it more long term. And then sometimes it feels good to check them off. Once they're written down, you don't have to worry about them anymore. They'll give you a roadmap of where you need to go.
Now, do you use sticky notes? Do you have a journal? What do you use to write?
Well, I have multiple colored pens, and you even saw me bring one today. And in certain cases, I put sticky notes. One of the things I do for my big projects at the office, at your workplace, is I get a small whiteboard, and I put Post-it notes on it with the projects that need to be done, and then I even get more detail with that, and then I have who's the responsible person and when do we need to get done. I make that available to the people around me, and I encourage them to add to that so they can see where they're at. Most people don't know where they're at. They just go through life, and they get up in the morning, and they brush their teeth, hopefully, and or maybe not, then they can come see me, and then, you know, they go off and live their life, and they don't take the time to step back and say, where do I want to be in 6 months, 2 years, 5 years. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't appreciate and enjoy what you're doing. And the term that I got from years ago is happy discontent. I'm not an unhappy person, but I realize that there's other stuff out there. So I'll tell you, at 70, I'm not ready to get out. You know, you look at the people, and they say lots of really successful people after age 70 get even more successful. How do you measure success? That's an interesting thing, because we didn't talk about that. It's not just financial. It's, are you able to pay it forward? Can you give more of yourself away to the people around you to help them live a little bit better life? Can you reach your hand out to that person that needs it? That's kind of like the veteran stuff and all the other stuff.
Well, let's talk a bit about how you like to surround yourself with the so-called one percenters and elaborate on that.
This is interesting. I have a really good friend from Minnesota, and he said, add to your circle of friends. Find people that are going someplace. By the way, even if you don't know them, I mean, I talk to people in the airport, to every place. And what you do is you find that person. I have a very good friend who's helped me with my radio stuff out of Canada. I go to a seminar for the guy, and I said, do you golf? I mean, we had 400 people in the seminar in the Caribbean. It was too hot, so I go listen to this guy. It was a free seminar. And he's written two books, of which I'm in his second book. And I said, do you golf? You just go out and... He said, not often and not well. And I said, would you like to? And he said, yes. And I wasn't sure whether he wanted to actually golf with me or he wanted to get away from his wife and kids and his in-laws in a two-bedroom condo. So the idea here is that just open your eyes, open the blinders up, and see who's out there. And because you may find, you told this story to me earlier, stretch your boundaries. By the way, it might hurt, but guess what? You might have expansive new worlds that are very exciting and even more fulfilling than you could imagine.
And I think we also need to understand the person or people on the other end to whom we are stretching our boundaries. They've done the same thing. They've been through the same thing. We might not think so, but we need actually to put ourselves in their shoes for a moment.
We need to celebrate the wins that we have, because God only knows it, or life tells us, nah, you can't do it, or whatever the case may be, the law of inertia tries to hold you down. No. There are lots of people out there that want to share, and from their life lessons or your own, you're going to be in a better place. And the time that you were willing to spend with me today, I hope that your listening audience really gets the fact that you are in control of what goes on. It doesn't always happen the way you want it to, but you are the person that's in charge of you. And I encourage you, I mean, you know, part of this is to tell you the things that I do in dentistry, but what hypes me up is not just that. Fixing teeth is my hobby. This other stuff is what I love.
The passion you were talking about. But it also seems to me, going back to some of what you said before, is we need to strike a balance in life. In other words, yes, look ahead. Where do you want to be 6 months from now? Where do you want to be a year from now? But by the same token, there is a portion of us that needs to live life at that moment, right? Step out and smell the roses, so to speak.
It's an interesting article that a friend of mine gave me on positive noticing, the value of looking every day. So here's my little tidbit as we near the end of the hour here. Every day on your way home, think of two or three things that positively happened to you today and celebrate those. You'll be amazed how it will change your life, because you go home and say, gee, this one said this at work, blah, 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 blah. No. Think of two or three things every day, and if you really want to see progress, put in a diary.
Do you keep a diary?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. My diary, I have years' worth of my daytimer pages. It has all these different notes of all the wins, some of the loses, and the goals for decades. I mean, I have my whole practice on one little piece of cardboard that I got out of a shirt that I just write all these numbers in.
This is incredible. It really is. Now, how about the modern devices that we have out there today with smartphones and all to keep notes, et cetera? Do you use that, or you believe in writing it down?
I got to tell you, I still believe in writing it down. And, you know, I tried to buy a new cover for my daytimer, and I couldn't find one with all the compartments, so I fixed the zipper myself, for crying out loud, because I realized the value of writing down. And I know lots of people are using that. I don't open lots of my emails because it's not the same. I want FaceTime. I want talk time. I want to be with that person, because that's where it's at, because technology is taking us away from that.
Yeah.
I mean, children today don't know how to talk to each other. They'll be on a date and they'll text each other. What is wrong with you?
I am. Are you concerned about what it's going to be like 5 or 10 years down the road, because this generation coming up, that's how they communicate?
I hope that they're going to get a life lesson that it don't work as well as this other stuff. Because we've been long left to see cycles that come and go, and the cycles come and go. I think if in the history of time, Steve Jobs will go down as one of the all-time human beings that ever lived.
Absolutely.
But it's what happens with this technology. It's the responsibility, by the way, of parents to not have children do that. They come into my office all the time. I said, do you go to sleep with your phone? Yeah, I mean, please, you know. And I watch them. They're next to each other. So I think you're going to go through a period. I think there are more benefits than harmful effects, but we need to do moderation. We need to do common sense stuff and make time. Eat dinner together. I mean, all these old-fashioned
Absolutely.
Things.
And eat dinner together at the table, not right. in front of the television
right.
set. Absolutely. Best piece of business advice you were ever given?
Winston Churchill, when he gave a graduation speech to his preparatory school, had a five-word speech. Here it is. Never. 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 Never quit. And he sat down.
That says it all, really.
Yep.
That's it. Just keep on going. We have a couple of minutes left. What haven't we covered?
Well, I think that, you know, you were kind enough to hear about my story. And what I want people to know, it's not my story. It's what's in your heart, what's in your story that you should be celebrating. And I really want people out of this hour to take a little bit of time. Really, I do this when I'm with people. I say, what did you get out of the time we spent together? And people don't know how to do that. You know, when people come into the office, I say, okay, tell me something good about your life. And you can't believe how hard it is. People are straining and sweating and nothing. I mean, you know. So I invite people from this time you have been kind enough to share with me today. Before the end of today, think about the different things you might have heard. Codify, put something down in writing. Look at it. Put a date. It doesn't matter what it is. I'm gonna bring flowers home for my wife. I'm not gonna pick on my husband who wants to watch the football game on Sunday. I'm really gonna make sure that I read to my children. Whatever that case may be. But take some action out of this time we've spent together. If nothing happens, I hope that you've helped me inspire some people to take some form of action. And then don't stop. Because if you do it once, the law of inertia said a body at rest stays at rest. So you give it a good big push, and then you stand back and wait for the ball to keep rolling. Well, that 600-pound concrete ball is not going to keep rolling if you don't put forth some effort. And if it feels like it's too effortful, do it anyway. Do it anyway. When you get back into a health routine, you know the first couple of weeks are tough.
That's right.
And then find people around you. Share your story. They're not going to make fun of you. They're going to say, wow, you really thought of that. I always wanted to think about that. And go out and develop a sustainable habit. Power of Habit, one of the most influential books by Charles Duhigg, talks about how you can change your habits. It's called a cue, a response, and a reward. Change your rewards. Leaves are coming down. People hate to do the leaves. Go save up your soda bottles, take it back, and find on Craigslist, a hot tub for $300, and surprise your wife or your spouse or your significant other with a hot tub. Instead of hating to break leaves, you get to spend time in a hot tub. So design your own reward, even if it sounds outrageous, and just take some steps.
We're out of time. I cannot tell you how honored we were to have you in studio for the last hour. And when I look back at what happened to me today that was good, this hour will be one of those things.
Thank you very much. And thank your audience for not turning the station off.
Dr. Philip Feldberg, president and owner of New England Dental Center, our guest. That is going to do it for Front and Center.